Our next case is 14-363, State of Ohio versus Travis Blankenship. Ms. Ross Kinsey.
Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court, Catherine Ross Kinsey, representing appellant Travis Blankenship. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal, please. A trial court presented with evidence that an individual is not a sex offender should not be mandated to punish that individual under Senate Bill 10, but should be free to consider whether such a punishment would be cruel and unusual. The federal and state constitutions prohibit cruel and unusual punishment, and the United States Supreme Court has explained that protection flows from the precept of justice that punishment should be graduated and proportioned to the offense. As this court recognized in Williams, under Senate Bill 10, sex offenders are not allowed to challenge their classifications because the classification is automatic, and all the registrations apply without regard to the future dangerousness of the individual and are based solely on the fact of a conviction. In this case, the sentencing judge stated that the court is required by law to classify the defendant as a Tier 2 sex offender. In response to defense counsel's objection under the Eighth Amendment that the mandatory sex offender classification should not be imposed, the judge responded, "You can see if you can get the Court of Appeals to change the requirements of my job." When the record demonstrates that an individual is not a sex offender, the trial court should be able to consider that individual's Eighth Amendment argument and determine if punishing him as a sex offender would be grossly disproportionate to the nature of the offense and the character of the offender, and therefore a violation of his constitutional rights.
Right now, the law does not require a hearing and does not provide for a hearing on the issue of whether someone should be registered under the law, correct?
Correct, yes.
It had been that way, but then we had the change in the law, correct?
Yes, and under Senate Bill 10, the classification is mandatory and automatic and is just merely a function of the conviction of a crime.
Okay. So is that something the legislature should be doing, or we should be, if we were to find in your favor and say this is cruel and unusual, the legislature could then determine make the appropriate changes. Is that what you're saying?
Legislature could respond by making changes to the law. However, the issue here is whether or not the mandatory classification where an individual is found not to be a sex offender would violate that person's constitutional rights. The constitutional challenge under the Eighth Amendment would still apply if the legislature wanted to provide a different mechanism that found it wouldn't violate the Eighth Amendment. That's up to the legislature. However, classifying an individual as a sex offender, punishing an individual who is a sex offender as a sex offender, would be cruel and unusual.
What did your client plead to?
Pled to one count of unlawful conduct.
Sexual conduct with a minor.
With a minor, yes.
And that is a sex offense?
Yes, in his case it's a sex offense because he doesn't fall within certain age restrictions that would keep it to not be,
right. He was
not make him a sex
21
offender.
Or so, and she was 15, and then there was a subsequent violation of the court order by your client. In contact with a victim again?
Yes.
Okay. So you don't disagree that he was or is a sex offender?
I do not disagree under the law that as the law is written, the revised code defines sex offender as an individual who
commits. How else would you define a sex offender if not under the law?
Here we have a determination from a psychologist, an evaluation from a psychologist that is admitted as part of the PSI here, where the psychologist was able to individually meet with and evaluate Mr. Blankenship and determined in that psychologist's opinion that Mr. Blankenship was not a sex offender.
Isn't that the problem in Ohio right now that you bring to us today? Is, as the chief indicates, when there's a conviction for this crime, you are a sex offender per se, correct?
Yes, the discrepancy between the definition as the revised code definition automatically classifying someone who is a commits a sexually oriented offense as a sex offender versus the psychologist determination, in this case, individual determination.
But in order for us to agree with you, don't you have to get us up the hill to calling it cruel and unusual?
Yes. To
how do you do that?
Here, when we have an individual like Mr. Blankenship, who is deemed not to be a sex offender, the record demonstrates that an uncontroverted psychologist report that an individual is not a sex offender, and then the punishment of classifying that individual as a sex offender, which this court in Williams and then in Ray CP have also determined that that is punishment. That punishment applied to an individual who is not a sex offender is grossly disproportionate to individuals.
Who besides the psychologist has said he's not a sex offender?
In this case, that is we have a psychologist report. It's an uncontroverted report. There was not an additional, there was no battle of the experts in this case. There was not an additional.
But I guess the point I'm getting at is, for example, the trial court judge did not make that finding.
Correct. The trial court judge did not make that finding. And as evidence from the record in front of us, it's clear that the trial court, that the trial court did not think it had the ability to make such a finding.
Blankenship pled guilty?
Yes, he pled guilty.
And were his consequences of the plea explained to him during the plea colloquy?
I believe so. The record before us has the sentencing transcript. But
was he advised that he would be designated as a sex offender
yes.
and have to report twice a year for 25 years at
yes.
the time of the plea?
I believe so, yes.
You're not contesting that?
No.
Your view is that based on the report of the expert, he is not declared to be a sexual offender, and you're lodging an as-applied to him constitutional challenge that this is cruel and unusual punishment?
Yes.
And what standard should we utilize if we would agree with your position that this would be an as-applied constitutional challenge to your client?
It's additional, not just to him, but to other individuals that fall within his category as well.
Well, how do we describe the category, and how do we instruct trial judges to make these kinds of determinations if we agree with you?
That is difficult. I admit that it is difficult to...
That's why I'm asking you the question.
Yes, absolutely. Mr. Blanken, in order to identify individuals who would fall within this category, it is difficult to define that category, and this court, in order to give trial courts...
Guidance
as to how to identify these individuals could require, as we have in this instance, a psychologist report that establishes that he is not a sex offender.
But you know, you keep saying he's not a sex offender. I think it's more accurate to say that his opportunity or the probability of reoffending is not high, and he's not undergoing treatment. There's a difference. By statute, he is a sex offender.
Okay, yes.
He pled guilty to being a sex offender. So what you're arguing here is because you have a psychologist that says that this may have just been a one-time incident with this one particular person and he's not likely to engage in this kind of conduct again, and he's not in treatment because, quite frankly, treatment's not what he needs. You're saying that is the underpinnings, the basis for the cruel and unusual.
Yes.
Okay, but one of the cases that you're relying on in Ray CP, and that was a juvenile.
Yes.
And that was a lifetime registration.
Yes.
And that was, there were elements present in that case or considerations in that case that are not present here.
Yes,
correct?
This is not an extension.
I mean,
of,
your client's
of
an
CP.
Adult.
Yes, he
juvenile.
Is an adult. Correct.
Okay. The victim, however, was a juvenile.
Yes.
Okay.
Counsel, we can go back to Justice O'Donnell's question because I'm having the same trouble about how much of the statute you want us to invalidate, and when you say this is an as-applied challenge, to whom does it apply? So you said where there's evidence. You also mentioned where that a trial court could require a psychologist's report. Couldn't you more easily define it as where there is evidence presented, including a psychological report of some kind? Can you help me identify the parameters of the as-applied challenge?
Yes, as applied to individuals who would fall within this category, defined, could be how the Chief Justice defined the category as individuals who do not need psychological or do not need sex offender therapy because they are not likely to reoffend. In order to assist trial courts in getting to that point, could evidence, as we have in the record that is clear in this case, that we have the psychologist's report, that could assist trial courts in determining whether or not an individual falls.
So then we would have a system whereby you'd have dueling psychologist reports, potentially, and then you'd have to have a hearing.
Yes, it is possible.
But right now, the hearing is not provided for by statute.
Correct.
So how do you get a hearing?
The hearing would be when an individual raises an Eighth Amendment challenge. It would be on the burden would be on the defendant to raise that challenge.
When would they have that hearing?
Because this is a sentencing issue, it could be at sentencing and would properly happen at that time after it's raised. They could then have an opportunity to get the state could then have an opportunity to get additional evaluation. And
don't you think this argument is better made to the legislature?
Because it is an Eighth Amendment challenge and it is a constitutional right, it is properly before this court to determine whether, depending on how this court comes out, the legislature might decide to change the structure in response. However, as the law is written now, the trial court felt that its hands were tied and could not address the Eighth Amendment argument, and that's why we are here today.
Counsel, it almost seems that this is really a constitutional challenge as applied, an overbreadth challenge because of the problems that we're having in defining the category, that this process, this registration process, which is, we have said, a punishment now, that it is applying to every individual without hearing the way it had been before, where you could at least have the judge making the determination. Now it's automatic, and as a result, the statute is overbroad, and it leads to Eighth Amendment violations. Is that kind of how you're approaching it?
It could be. I did not make a specific overbreadth argument. However, that you highlight the basis of the argument in that the term sex offender and the automatic registration encompasses individuals because it is automatic and defined by statute, does not provide, the law does not allow for, as the trial court saw it at least, these arguments to be made that an individual could be classified as a sex offender, however not.
If we were to require a hearing in cases relating to the sex registration, would we not be legislating?
I don't believe that requiring the hearing would be legislating. It would just be protecting the Eighth Amendment rights and would be upholding the Constitution.
So is that a remedy that you could agree with, that we would require a hearing in every case of registration, sex registration?
I don't believe a hearing would be necessary to be required in every case. I believe that the law as written and identifying individuals as sex offenders based on their crime, in most cases, individuals who commit sexually oriented offenses would not implicate this issue.
So would it be a hearing when requested?
Yes, only when an individual would present this argument and would argue that they fall within this category, would a hearing be necessary on this issue?
Ms. Ross Kinsey, I have two questions for you. The first one is, has your research shown that there are other jurisdictions that have looked at this issue specifically as applied constitutional challenge under the Eighth Amendment for cruel and unusual punishment?
No. I have
no sister Supreme Courts in the United States, to your knowledge, have ruled.
Not that
on
I'm
this.
Aware of, unless it's just recently happened.
And what about lesser appellate courts? Have any of those courts written opinions on this topic?
Other courts have addressed this issue. However, in other states, those courts have rested on the determination that their structure was civil and not punitive in nature, and so did not address the.
So your argument is unique because in a recent decision, this court has determined that sex offender classification is now criminal, and that's what's impelling your argument to this court.
Yes, because this court in Williams and has affirmed that in In Re CP that the sex offender classification under Senate Bill 10 is punitive allows for a cruel and unusual punishment argument to be made.
And how are you now classifying cruel and unusual punishment in this case? How are you suggesting it is cruel and unusual? I mean, your client spent 10 days? Was that what he spent in jail?
I believe it was 12 days, but yes,
he spent 12 days in jail. You're not suggesting that's cruel and unusual?
No, the punishment, the sex offender classification and punishment as a sex offender is
what
it's not
the classification. It's not the branding. It's not the scarlet letter that you're worried about. It's the registration for 25 years. Is that what you're complaining about?
The registration for 25 years, everything that goes along with his Senate Bill 10 requirements to be classified and register as a sex offender include for 25 years he has to register in person
Is it the process? Is it the branding of classification that you're objecting to?
All of it together.
Or do you think it's...
I believe it's all of it together, the classification.
All the restrictions, the places where you can live, all the, you know, activity you can pursue, all the jobs that you can potentially be available to apply to or eligible for. This is all part of your argument, correct?
Yes, absolutely, as well as the if he fails to register appropriately, fill out the proper forms, he has the consequence of facing additional F-4s every 180 days until he's 45, 46 years old.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Saunders.
Morning, Madam Chief Justice. May it please the court. My name is Ryan Saunders, and I represent the state of Ohio. First and foremost, under Smith v. Doe, the United States Supreme Court held that sex offender registration laws were not punitive in nature. And under this court's case, State v. Williams, this court merely held that it was punitive for retroactive purposes. There are three reasons.
Did you not say it was punitive in nature, that it had morphed from the civil side onto the criminal side because of the changes in law?
That is correct, but the issue before the court in that case was very narrow, and that was whether the law prohibited the retroactivity clause. There are three reasons why this court should affirm the Second District Court of Appeals.
Are you arguing that this is a civil sanction to us? Is that your argument?
My argument is simply, one, that it's not cruel and unusual punishment because the nature of...
You started out by citing the Smith case to us.
Correct.
And the holding in Smith, if I understand it, is that this is not a criminal sanction. It's a civil sanction.
Correct. I think under the Smith v. Doe case, which is obviously binding on this court, where the Supreme Court held that sex offender registration laws were civil in nature, I think that this can also be...
So are you suggesting we should go back and revisit CP?
I'm suggesting that this court should go back and revisit State v. Williams.
Which case?
State v. Williams. Your
Thank
Honor.
You.
Are you saying that we can declare it to be punitive and not civil if we're trying to apply it retroactively, but for all other applications, it's a civil or akin to a civil provision?
I think this court
Is that
could,
what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor. I think this court could do that.
But isn't there a problem, though, as evidenced by Judge Donovan's dissent, that this particular individual, I believe she said, he poses no threat to the community, and yet for 25 years, I don't think he's allowed to live near a school, is he?
He is not allowed to live within 1,000 feet of a within 1,000 feet of a school.
Now, can you and I discuss that this morning? Are you going to tell me that's not punitive? 25 years for a young man who poses no threat to the community, according to the psychologist and according to at least one court of appeals judge, that's not punitive in your mind?
We could say that that is punitive. If you will
agree?
I will agree that that is punitive, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for your honesty.
But just briefly, under the psychologist's opinion, I think it needs to be brought out that the psychologist said that he has a 12% recidivism rate, and then after 5 years, he has a 19% recidivism rate. So that recidivism rate seems to be going up year after year. And so I think that's the interest and why the General Assembly wants sex offenders to register, because of the rate of recidivism.
Is that the rate with this individual or in general?
No, with this individual, the defense-paid psychologist opined that it's 12%, and then 5 years, 19%.
The other things that go along with this, the registration, and that gets published, right?
Yes.
So presumably this young man, from all we know about him, will go on to lead a normal life, get married, have kids, and for the next 25 years, where his kids go to school, parents of other children can type in their computer to see who are the sex offenders in the neighborhood, and this guy's going to explain to his kids, I'm a registered sex offender, and you may get teased about that at school. Would that be one of the normal consequences of this law?
That could possibly occur, but Mr. Blankenship committed a crime. He was 21. He had sex with a 15-year-old, and as part of that, he's a sex offender, and he must register.
How many 21-year-olds having sex with 15-year-olds, what percentage would you say of that occurring in our society ends up with a criminal prosecution?
I cannot honestly guess to that number, Your Honor.
Wouldn't you guess that there's quite a bit of that going on that doesn't get prosecuted?
I would suggest not, because a 21-year-old is typically a senior in college, a 15-year-old is typically a freshman or sophomore in high school. I don't think there is much of that going on. Second, there's been no court in the United States that has done an adult age-specific analysis for the Eighth Amendment. Mr. Blankenship is arguing that because he is almost a juvenile, NRACP should extend to him, and because he's less likely to offend, that the requirement for him to register is cruel and unusual punishment.
Does this need to be analyzed on a case-by-case basis, or is it a per se violation and we're just done?
I don't think it's a per se violation, because under the law.
I notice you just expanded the age gap to 8 years. If somebody's a freshman in high school and a senior in college, that's an 8 year gap. Is that true for everyone?
No, I was under the premise that a 15-year-old could be a freshman, Your Honor. But for example, if a victim is 13 years and one day, and the defendant is 22 years old and 364 days, that is unlawful sexual conduct with a minor. If the victim is 12 years and 364 days, and the defendant is 21 years old, that's rape. That's lifetime in prison with a possibility of parole after 10 years. My point in saying this is that the General Assembly has to make bright line tests, especially for sex offenses. This case does not reach the level of cruel and unusual punishment. It's not overly burdensome for this individual to go down to the downtown Springfield every 6 months.
If I understood the argument of your opposing counsel, it's as applied to Mr. Stewart in this instance. It's cruel and unusual. And logically, according to the argument, if I hear it correctly, based on the fact that he is not a sex offender.
Correct. And
the court said, oh, that's something for another court to hear. I'm not going to weigh into that. And so the argument is,
here we are,
as a judicial matter of interpretation of the Eighth Amendment, is this cruel and unusual as applied to him? And I think it's based on, according to the discussion this morning, the registration requirement, the length of the requirement, and all the other requirements of those who are required to register.
Correct. And if the
but I haven't heard your argument to that. You're telling us other things, but you haven't addressed that.
It is not cruel and unusual punishment.
Why?
Because if this court looks at Supreme Court precedent of what cruel and unusual punishment is, I would urge it to look at Hammerlin versus Michigan. That case, the individual had 600 grams of crack cocaine, sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. The United States Supreme Court said that's not cruel and unusual punishment. I would ask this court to look at California v. Ewing, where the three strikes provision, where an individual stole golf clubs, was sentenced to 25 years in prison without the possibility of parole.
But counsel, we do have the opportunity to look at our Constitution.
That's correct.
And we could interpret it differently to say we're not bound by the United States Supreme Court and the Eighth Amendment analysis. So what Ohio cases can you point to say that the Ohio Constitution would not support a finding of cruel and unusual punishment here?
This court has always held that Section 9 of the Ohio Constitution and the Eighth Amendment are coextensive. I could not find any cases where Section 9 has diverged from the Eighth Amendment analysis.
Although, counsel, in State versus Williams, we have taken the position that this is, depending on how we read that, if it's narrow or broad, but if you read it broadly, that this is not a civil situation, but a criminal situation. So in that regard, we've already departed from what you say the federal position is. If we look at Article or Section 9 in relation to the Williams case, it's very possible that we could, if we determine that, we could find that we provide more protection in situations like this under the Eighth Amendment.
That's correct. The federal constitution is a floor. It's not a ceiling. And this court is very...
The remedy question that I asked, if we were to find that it was cruel and unusual, what would you say to a defendant's request for a hearing in a situation similar to this before before the registration?
At the trial court level, Your Honor?
Yes.
The state would obviously object, and then if depending on the procedure, would hire its own expert to rebut, saying this defendant has pled guilty to a sex offense. He or she is a sex offender, and under the law, they must register.
Counsel, following up on Justice Lenzinger's remedy approach here, your argument is just conclusively as a matter of law, once there's a conviction, the automatic application of the reporting requirements and the disclosure of all of that as a matter of constitutional law is not cruel and unusual punishment. What the other side, I think, is really requesting is on an individual basis, if a defendant who has been convicted of or pled to something that's deemed to be a sex offense, tripping of the statute, if they want to hire the psychologist, hire the experts, and make the allegation that it's cruel and unusual as applied to them, what's wrong with affording a hearing instead of cookie cutter, one size fits all? Allowing the defender to come in and say, look, this is the circumstances of my conviction. This is the evidence we have of my stability going forward. And in my case, to apply this statute is cruel and unusual. Period. A hearing.
I think the General Assembly is well within their police power to designate automatic registration requirements. And under the facts of this case.
And they have the wisdom to know that one size fits all when it comes to cruel and unusual.
I do not think that this matter arises to cruel and unusual punishment, Your Honor. And under the facts of this case, he twice had sex with this 15-year-old. He was only charged once with unlawful sexual conduct. And then after being told by the trial court not to have any contact with the victim or her family, he had contact with her again.
But so, your argument wouldn't change. If the facts were changed, your argument would still be the same. I mean, even if the psychologist's report said, this guy has 0% recidivism likelihood. So the facts of this case might be sympathetic to this defendant, but under your argument, it wouldn't matter what the facts are. We could say that the facts of a different case could be even more cruel and more unusual, but I think our issue is just all they're asking for, and all we could really hold is to say a trial court just has to make that determination. So I think I'm having trouble with your as a matter of law argument and then going to the facts of the case. So just clarify, though, since I haven't really asked you a question yet, your argument would not change even if the facts were more favorable for this defendant.
Correct. As a matter of law, it is not cruel and unusual punishment to have to register twice a year.
Even if there's a psychologist report that says there is a 0% likelihood of recidivism?
No, it would not change.
If we accept the fact, which we must because we've declared it to be such, that this is a criminal punishment, this is punitive in nature, this registration scheme that is on the books is punitive in nature, you're saying that, in essence, you have to agree with that in order to say, let's compare it to other cases that have been decided by the United States Supreme Court, and they said even under these extreme circumstances, it's not cruel and unusual, correct?
Correct.
All right. So you are agreeing, then, that this is a criminal punitive statute?
The way I read State v. Williams was as a narrow issue only applying to the prohibition against retroactivity.
Okay, but let's abandon that for a minute and go where we are, okay? I mean, I think you can sense, if you can't, it's, you know, there's a problem there. But I think you can sense that we all agree that this is a, at least the majority, that this is a criminal punitive statute.
Correct.
But you're saying it doesn't matter. He committed the crime. He agreed that he committed the crime by pleading guilty, knowing full well what the consequences were, and now is having remorse, having done so, and says, I don't want this penalty to attach to me, even though I agreed to it previously, even though I'm guilty of the conduct that precipitated this, but, you know, there is now, you know, some argument to be made that the Eighth Amendment will give me an out here, if you will. Now, do you see it as an Eighth Amendment issue? Do you see anything in the Ohio Constitution that would deviate in any way?
No, the Eighth Amendment, under my research, the Eighth Amendment and Section 9 have been coextensive. And so if the Supreme Court of the United States has held that it's not, the sex offender registry is not punitive, then I don't think there's any way that this court can find that the Eighth Amendment is violated. Of course, this court
said it's punitive. Let's go there. if the United States Supreme Court have said it's a civil sanction and it's not punitive, we've abandoned that. Look at it under the Eighth Amendment, and has there been any opinion that has come from the Supreme Court acknowledging that this could be a punitive criminal sanction? I don't think so.
No, I do not think so either.
So our reading of the Eighth Amendment is not informed by the cases that you are, our application of the Eighth Amendment is not informed by the cases that you're relying on, because you keep going back to the argument or the position of the United States Supreme Court that this is civil, not punitive. We've abandoned that. here in Ohio, we see things differently.
Correct. And if this court believes that it is punitive, then under Section 9, it could indeed find that there is a violation. Of course, the state of Ohio would.
Under Section 9 of the Ohio Constitution?
Yes, Your Honor.
Has that been argued to us? Has that been briefed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And have there been any other than 17 states altogether that have taken on the Adam Walsh amendments? I know that was in the briefs. I just want to make sure we're up to date on that. Have there been any other states?
The last I checked, it was still 17.
Still 17. And we're the first to say that this is criminal in nature now.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
For the foregoing reasons, I'd ask this court to affirm the Second District Court of Appeals.
Thank you. Counsel, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you. I would just like to address one point that was raised, the psychologist's determination about the recidivism likelihood for Mr. Blankenship is based on the Static 99 assessment tool, which is not an individualized assessment. It's essentially a 10-point checklist going forward, and the recidivism rates for Mr. Blankenship that were
Counsel, setting that aside for a minute, what under the Ohio Constitution will allow us, what support do you find other than CP that this is allowed by Section 9 of the Ohio Constitution? Because the Eighth Amendment, as I just said, interpreted by the United States Supreme Court, is still looking at this under the civil status. We've passed that. We've said this is a criminal punitive measure. What does Section 9 allow us?
Section 9, its prohibition against cruel and unusual punishment provides unique protection to Ohioans, independent of the protection from the Eighth Amendment, and when determining violations.
Do you have support for that?
It comes from In Re CP, citing Arnold v. Cleveland, and that is paragraph 59 of In Re CP. And when determining if punishment violates
You admit that CP is a juvenile matter and has the compelling facts of that case.
Yes. So this is distinct. This case obviously is not an extension of In Re CP. However, the Ohio Constitution can be violated by the mandatory sex offender classification is what I've argued here, that this issue also implicates
that. You would admit that this is uncharted territory. This is a case of definite first impression, and we would be the only court in the country to see things your way.
Yes.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you call a recess, please?
All rise.